The title of the presentation is Integrating Phenomenological Research with Middle School School Food Policy Implementation. So what I would like to do is stimulate a discussion maybe during the question and answer time, because this is a historical time, as the previous presenter, Laura Olson, mentioned, with the local school wellness policy legislation. Now a lot of school districts are really on board with what do we need to do to improve school lunch. When I was doing my master's in 95, I started my first project in with a middle school project improving the school food, and school food issues were not on the radar screen. And now it's like front and center. So it's a historical time and with a lot of opportunities. So I'd like to stimulate a discussion on how this type of research can complement food policy interventions in schools, and I'd like to do that by presenting the study I did during my dissertation. So why study middle school food practices? And the middle school years are a time when adolescents start to make their own decisions. Like the first presenter mentioned, physical activity can maintain set the stage for a lifelong physical activity. Same with food. They start making their independent food choices, which can last a lifetime. And if you think about the school breakfast program, school lunch, and after school, it can make about two-thirds of their calorie intake. Adolescent eating patterns have been going downhill for the last few decades, and what that has led to is our current situation with obesity, type 2 diabetes, and in particular, looking with a disparity lens, if you look at communities of color, African-American and Latino youth in particular are in particular at higher risk. So there's more and more literature proposing that it's helpful to use an ecological lens to look at this issue. And I see it as here's an adolescent, and both adolescents can both influence their environment and are influenced by their environment. And so what do we know about this topic? We know that there's this growing interest. You've probably all heard of the Michelle Obama's Let's Move campaign, in addition to these local school wellness policy requirements. And what we need is, as the previous speaker presented, there's issues about implementation that are a big challenge. Some school districts, they're strapped for resources. So they're saying we have these policies on the books, but we don't really have the funds to really implement these. And yet, in the area of schools that are implemented, there's a gap in terms of knowing, are these policies really working, especially for groups most affected by this conditions. So that leads me to the purpose of this study was to explore how middle school students' food and social environments influence their routine eating patterns inside and out of school. So that's consistent with the ecological perspective of not only in school, but out of school. So the question is, what is the relationship between implemented school food policies, middle school students' neighborhood food environment, and their social influences? And with a phenomenological perspective, the approach with phenomenology is, after identifying a topic of interest and seeing that this type of research is appropriate, then the steps are to what's called bracketing your experience of the researcher, which is kind of reflect on your experience with this topic and then try to, as much as possible, probably not totally 100% possible, but to put your experience aside and then to take a fresh look at what the target audience is experiencing, to really look at their lived experiences. So I was working at the county as a public health nutritionist, and with these, with a project at middle school and promoting nutrition in a soccer league, what I noticed, first, this, what I wanted to do, I wanted to do research that was beneficial to the participant as well as the researchers, because when I would do surveys on a soccer field, I was taking time out of their soccer practice to fill out a survey and to take their heights and weights. And so some of the middle school students would look at me kind of like, what are you doing? I want to be playing soccer instead of filling out a survey. So that kind of set my perspective of, okay, I want to do research where my participants aren't kind of looking at me with a sideways look, you know? And with the school-based intervention and talking with the different stakeholders like the school food service and the middle school students, I noticed this communication gap. The food service would say, well, we're providing the food that they want to eat, which was the less healthful food. And the middle school students would say, well, we want healthy food and the food doesn't taste good. And so I noticed this communication gap between the different stakeholders on school campuses. And so the methods that I used were this qualitative approach in which I developed some general research questions based on my interests, then collected preliminary data, and did this iterative process of then refining the research questions after doing some analysis. And this was part of my doctoral work. This was a two-year process where I collaborated with a science teacher to develop a nutrition and physical activity intervention based on goal setting and monitoring with middle school students. So the data that I collected, I used a phenomenological and ethnographic strategy, which I'll describe later. I had this paradigm of this mutually beneficial research that I described earlier, looking to not only generate knowledge, but to actually work with the middle school students to improve healthy food access on campus in the process, and the ecological approach I mentioned. So this school site is a special site, and the previous speaker mentioned implementation challenges. This school site was ahead of the curve in terms of implementing. This school site was in San Francisco. It was a small school by design. It was a K-8. I worked with the middle school students. The total school was about 275 students. The middle school kids were about 97 kids. And it was in a section of San Francisco where there was densely populated, a lot of corner stores with junk food on the easily accessible on the corner, predominantly Latino, diverse school, strapped for resources, as many schools are. And here's one difference. They had a lot going on, not only in terms of food policy, but also a lot of hands-on nutrition education, such as a school garden. The middle school students managed and hosted their own food bank, where they would provide food bags to community members on a weekly basis. And I was partnering with the science teacher on this this curriculum that we partnered for 2 years. But before I came, they were already doing a lot of food access projects, very hands-on. And they were implementing school food policy guidelines even before it was mandated. And they were taking it a step further, where they not only didn't have the food, they didn't have vending machines. They had no soda, no candy. And so they were meeting the nutrient guidelines. So I went through the, once I decided and honed in on the research focus, then I saw that it's important to look at the lived experience of students, because we can have policies, but if the policies are not making an impact on the daily lives of the people they're intended to impact, then what good are the policies? And this is a historic opportunity to have good, well thought through policies. And so this is some of the steps. John Creswell has a nice book on 5 approaches to qualitative research, and I use that a lot because he breaks it down kind of step by step. And so after identifying the phenomenon you're interested in and bracketing your own experience, then collecting experiences from several individuals, from about either 5 to about 25 individuals is a common sample size, then looking for their experience, and in interviews along with other data collection methods, then the process is to look for quotes that really synthesize the essence of their experience, and asking kind of two guiding questions. What is the experience, and what are the structural conditions around the experience? And then presenting those findings. Mm-hmm. So here's a data collection process that I went through. As I mentioned, 2 years of this collaboration, as I was co-developing and implementing this curriculum, I was working with a group of undergraduate students that I trained in qualitative data collection. And so we would collect field notes. I might have been co-teaching with the teacher, and the rest of the research team was there, like one at a time, kind of taking notes of the process and collecting those quotes during classroom discussions, and weekly journals. The students had journals on their experiences with working towards their nutrition and physical activity goals. And then I interviewed a group of eight students that I felt went through kind of, this was a meaningful experience that they had gone through to understand how they had experienced their routine day was in terms of their eating practices and how they're experiencing the food at their school, along with teacher interviews and field notes at school, the district food service meetings, talking about the school food policy. So these are kind of the general questions in analyzing what happened with the students in terms of what the students experienced and what was the conditions, what was the structural conditions that they experienced. We did open coding, looked at transcripts of the field notes and the interviews and the documents, the journals from the weekly journals from the students, triangulated and came up with arguments and claims. And the nice thing about having a long-term project, it was able to go back and talk with the students to then see if these findings were valid. So here's what were their experience. They would categorize the cafeteria food as nasty. Even though it had all the nutrient requirements, it was nasty and they just wouldn't participate in the school lunch. 10% participation rate, according to a survey done by the students. And they attributed part of it to inadequate cooking methods. Like there was an American Disabilities Act requirement to put an elevator in the school. And the students said they have enough money to put elevators in our schools, but they won't pay someone to cook lunch for us. So that was their experience in terms of the food. In terms of the conditions in the neighborhood conditions, is they would walk by the corner store and they would see all the chips and especially the hot chips. And one student mentioned how hot chips, you get addicted to hot chips. There's artificial flavors that taste better than the natural flavors, so that once you have it, you can't stop. You pass by the store and you remember that unnatural, stimulating experience and you want to have it again. Peer and family also, even though there's a ban on the junk food, the kids can get it through peers and family and share it with each other on the school campus. So in summary of the findings, I propose that the neighborhood food functions as a quasi on-campus food, competitive food, even though it's not offered on school campus. And that all these factors combine so that a student would say, sometimes I go the whole day without eating because I don't like the cafeteria food. When my friends bring KFC, I eat it because I'm so hungry. So this is kind of even a biological experience. And so in some benefits of doing this type of research that I wanted to kind of see in the question and answer, we can discuss this, is how can this type of research be complemented with some of the school food policy interventions that are happening. I see that, for example, in this study, these findings broadened the debate, where in the Let's Move campaign by Michelle Obama, I don't see the funding for school food service, such as the capacity to cook food on campus, which I think would make a difference. There is some benefits of the financing initiative for corner stores. I think that's a positive aspect. And so I believe by understanding the lived experience of the target audience, say a youth, then you can identify promising strategies. Some of the challenges is external validity. And you know, with a sample size of eight interviews, then when you go to publish, then the reviewers might say, well, this is not the type of research that we publish. So it's kind of a non-conventional research approach that might take some communication with the with peers in terms of peer review to really give this type of research the space that it deserves. Thank you. Mm-hmm.